Welcome to the Danger Room, a place to prepare for the opponents you are yet to face. We discuss strategy and how to level up your game in Marvel Crisis Protocol.
Welcome to the third installment of the Top 4 interviews in the Danger Room. And I've got with me on a mobile connection, hence the sound quality, I've got Travis Foss, who's taken most of the time to speak to me across the continent. So, Travis, welcome. How are you doing?
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me. I'm doing pretty good. So I'm pretty stoked to have made it this far. So
yeah,
I'm pretty excited.
Congratulations. Yeah, I know you've been playing well and you've been a contender for a long time, but first time in the top four. So well done on that.
Yeah, I've done all four seasons. First season, I went X and one. I lost to Sploosh, I think, in the second last round, I think. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the top four, I guess, for that first season. And then second season, I went X and one. I think that's when we had that weird oceanic bracket again, the first mm-hmm. one.
Yeah,
Morgan and I played off to see which of us would go through to the top four. And he beat me on that one. And then I went undefeated in the third season and lost to the eventual winner in top eight. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I've got X and one this season and finally cracked into the top four.
So consistently there or thereabouts and just finally really pushed through. Good job. Where might people know you from?
So I'm from the Strike Better podcast. We record fortnightly and we're sort of helmed by Ryan Farmer, who's quite a big X-Wing podcaster, and he's jumped across ship to do some Marvel stuff with us. So he's sort of helming that up, and I record with Morgan, who's one of the other top four, and Vaughn, who does a lot of the streaming for Marvel stuff. So we've got a good little crew there. So yeah. If anyone wants to tune in.
And Murgo as well. Don't forget Murgo.
Oh, Murgo as well, yeah. And Murgo does articles and stuff. They're getting there. They're on their way up. I think they're pretty good. They're not as good, I think, as the Xavier Protocol articles, but they're definitely getting closer and closer every time he does one.
Very kind of you to say that.
That's great, mate.
You've been described as having a very unique style of play. So how would you describe it yourself?
So I was chatting to Morgan and Jan about this last night. So for people who don't know me, I play a lot of first-person shooters and stuff. And I definitely prescribe to a Twitch or YouTube streamer called Dr. Disrespect. And not that I'm disrespectful, but his motto is speed, momentum, and violence. So I just look at how I can win the quickest way possible and the most explosive way I can.
So yeah, how does that categorize? What does that look like on the tabletop?
So like a lot of low risk plays that people would probably look at and think, I won't do that because, you know, I don't want to risk it. Generally, I would risk it. And fortunately, a lot of the time it pays off. Sometimes it doesn't. But I tend to go for the low risk percentage plays or the plays that people just either don't see coming or don't expect coming, because it might be considered silly at the time I do them, but it sort of pays off for me in the end. But I know it definitely goes into Morgan's robotic brain and makes it skip a circuit a few times. So
yeah, it's contrasting.
Contrasting play styles.
Yeah. That kind of raises
Morgan's always said that when I read the rule book and actually learn to play the game, I'll be unstoppable.
So. Yeah. It's interesting, though, because you kind of made your name with Wakanda, and I know you're a big Wakanda proponent. And how do you jive that kind of those high-risk plays with Wakanda? What does that look like? They're often sort of about guaranteed things without rolling dice. So how does that translate into Wakanda?
Well, I definitely play off the back of their guaranteed stuff. I'm a big proponent. Like, I'm lucky that my dice are usually pretty good in most games I play. But I try and take as much of the dice out of as I can. So Wakanda's a really good starting place because they've got mitigation in place with Shuri, and Panther's got his mantle rerolls. Okoye's got their self rerolls. They've got the Wakanda rerolls. So they've got a lot of options to mitigate the dice. But a lot of people play Wakanda quite defensively and quite robotically. It's just, if you do X, I do Y, and Z happens kind of thing. So I tend to throw that out a bit of the and go, well, I'm going to play Wakanda really offensively. I'm going to leverage off the back of their rerolls, and I'm going to get right in your face and try and just overbear on top of you as much as I can. So I tend to play them quite in an attacking style rather than a defensive push gameplay style. That's why I tend to pivot in my Wakanda wave to characters like Mystique, where I can just sit there and fish for a good dice roll until you roll a bad dice roll. Then I can spend all my rerolls to make it really big on my side. And then as I learned partway through the season, I can also Wakanda wave Wakanda forever in that turn, and you don't get the rerolls and reactive superpowers and stuff. So I can leverage off the back of that and try and force my style of gameplay onto people.
Yeah, it's great. It's characters with lots of reactive defensive tech. That hadn't occurred to me, so I really like that take on it. Very different to kind of the traditional highly control focused Wakanda wave, but it seems to be very effective.
Yeah, I love playing it that way. And I know I rave about Mystique on our podcast a bit, but in Wakanda especially, I really enjoy her style of gameplay, and I really like making MODOK players sad.
So, what's the specific interactions you're talking about there?
So, like, if I play Mystique into MODOK, he can't get bodyguards, can't get any help, he can't do rerolls, he can't do any of his normal shenanigans to sort of make him stay alive. He's only got 2 physical defense into Mystique's 4, so as soon as I see him roll, you know, 1 or 0 blocks, and I can get Mystique to 4 or 5 damage, and I can usually railroad him down pretty quick. And then on the back end of that, I've got a Wakanda Forever. If I need to really get rid of him, I can Wakanda Forever. And again, he can't bodyguard, he can't reroll, he can't do any of his shenanigans. So it's really fun to make them upset when they see MODOK go down so quickly.
Yeah, and I guess you've got all those Wakanda rerolls you mentioned before about like Shuri and the leadership to try and, when you're not counting wild, you've got even more dice that you want to reroll. So there's some nice
stuff
there. Yeah,
exactly. So it's been a lot of fun.
So given that you've been playing Wakanda for, you know, pretty much as long as you've been playing the game, why have you put them with Brotherhood in your finals roster?
I find Wakanda, last season they were all right at the higher point levels, because I could sort of just take Wakanda Wave and add Killmonger and go from there. I played a lot of 19-point games last season, but I did find them not as effective the higher the points level went. And I played a couple of games with Morgan watching him play Brotherhood, and I really enjoyed their play style. So I really enjoy them at high threat levels. I tend to pair MODOK and Magneto together as well, which is pretty debaucherous. So now I can add Lockjaw in there, and I've got a delivery platform for both of them. So that was probably where I was leading towards. I didn't have Lockjaw at the start of this season, but I've now got him in my roster. And I really like just the back end of turn one, playing off my aggressive play style. I really enjoy Asteroid M just dropping Magneto in on people and letting him unleash hell as much as possible.
It's good fun.
It's great fun.
Yep, Deception on Mystique too. Yeah, very nice. So looking at your roster, it's really interesting that you've only got 3 Wakandan affiliated characters and 3 Brotherhood affiliated characters. What led you to that point where you've got, once you've chosen your affiliation, you've got so few options for your core?
I pretty much, when I'm playing around affiliations, I tend to avoid the rogue agents. Not because they're not good, just because I find characters play better in their own affiliation, like they're kind of designed around the back of that play style. So I tend to just pick my absolute minimum core for the affiliation, and then the rest of my roster slots going to filling out points values where I can get efficient and effective characters to buff out either weaknesses in their roster or apply more strength to where they're already strong, so I can become really strong there and and overpower and push home.
And something that I talked about with Morgan was this idea of scaling, of taking, once you've got a core for a list, being able to build it at a variety of, ideally all between 14 and 20 threat values. How much does that factor in when you've got such a fixed core?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, a lot. And I tend to take characters for the last four slots as much as I can that scale between 3 and 5 threat. That's where my big one. So if I need 3 threat, Valkyrie goes in or Mystique goes in. If I need 5 threat, then I can look at Okoye and Valkyrie, or I can look at MODOK. I tend to base all mine around multiples of 3 and 5. And I've got Medusa there when I need that 4 occasionally, where I'm like, oh, I'm just, I only need 4 threat, so I'll bring in Medusa there, kind of thing. So, or like odd number multiples, I guess you could say, is what I scale my threat values off. So yeah, 3, 5, 7, how much I need to add to my affiliation to reach the threat level. And then I just take characters that I can play around with on that, I guess. I don't tend to stick too much with the odd number, the even threat characters. I already have a couple of them in there, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You got what, 2 2s and 2 4s, yeah.
I find a lot of the missions that we play in Crisis Protocol are, you know, 15, 19, 17, so... The even costed characters, I know it sounds a bit weird, but the even costed characters I find are a little bit awkward trying to slot in. Or you can only get one of them and then you sort of end up then playing back off the odd numbered characters. So,
yep, yeah, I can see that. But it means also with only 3 affiliated characters, you cannot play wider than 5 characters in a team.
No, no, 5 is my... is my minimum. And I tend to, as I'm reaching a point where I'm like, oh, I really should go for a 6 character, then I scale to like a 5 threat character and go, oh, I'll go 5 wide, but I'll go 5 wide where I'm like Magneto and MODOK together, for instance. So I've spent 11 threat on 2 characters, but I mean, if you're going to spend 11 threat on 2 characters, it's pretty good characters to spend 11 threat on.
Yeah, I guess.
That's my thought process.
For sure, and I can see it, and it, clearly it's working. My concern is that maybe it's, do you feel it's maybe a little bit predictable, the team you're going to bring?
Definitely, definitely. And but on one hand, I look at it and go, well, it is predictable what I'm going to bring, but what I am bringing is quite powerful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know it's coming, but, you know, you're watching a train come towards you slowly, and you're like, I know I should step off these tracks. But I don't think there's anything that I can do to stop that train coming towards me. And that's why I play off the back of such big hitters like MODOK and Magneto and Medusa and that kind of thing. And I find 6 wide, I tend to not enjoy as much. I find with 5 wide, there's at least one turn where something will happen where the priority might flip and I might get it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably played most games this season not having priority, so I've kind of just got to hold on and pray I live through the first opening round, and then I can do my own shenanigans.
Yeah, for sure.
But you're right, it is predictable, and I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, it probably is fairly predictable when I start bringing out lists. So
So with any dual affiliation, the pinch point I've always found is tactics cards. How hard was it to leave Magnetic Refraction out for Brotherhood?
I've never used it, to be honest, but I know the power of it. It was difficult. It was kind of a toss-up between that and Deception. I think a lot of my other tactic slots are kind of locked in. Hired Muscle and annoys me that I have to keep bringing it. If anything, I'd love to flick Hired Muscle and bring in, you know, Bitter Rivals or Magnetic Refraction and something that will give me a little bit more utility for the squads I'm playing, but I have been hamstrung with the power of Hired Muscle, so I've had to sort of, I only used it once all season against Sploosh. That was the only time I've actually had to use it, so it's just sat there as just like a, I've got Mare Fisk in my secures and I've got Hide Muscle. So on the off chance that I did play against somebody that didn't bring Hide Muscle, well, I could just play Mare Fisk and the odds of them winning goes downhill very quickly.
For sure. But you've also got Panic Grip, so the evacuation, the classic hired muscle extract. What's the rationale behind bringing that as well?
Same thing on the back of if I do play into a player that doesn't have hired muscle and I either get extracts or secures, I've got one option in those that I can apply pressure with and say, all right, well, we'll play citizens or we'll play, you know, whatever. And I've got the hired muscle card to play into that. I enjoy 19 threat as well. It's probably a big one. 19 is really strong for Brotherhood. So I tend to like playing around that threat value if I can. So that just added to that as well.
Yeah. Who's your, because you haven't got an Angela in the list in your roster. So who's your preferred hired muscler?
I don't really have a preferred, I guess. I don't really have a preferred character, I guess you could say. I probably would look more towards maybe a Mystique or something, where I can get a little bit of deception play on them if they've managed to get priority, so I can do a little bit more shenanigans there and drag them in, drag all the extracts towards me, and then they've got to then come to me and play on my terms. I don't really have a preferred. Yeah, I guess you could say. Oh, I'm very keen to play Angela. Oh, I haven't played her yet, and I've played against her a couple of times, but I'm very keen to give her a go in like the next season. So,
Okay. A couple of characters that you've got in there, which were only just released just before List Lock, was Medusa and Lockjaw. How do they fit into your plans?
Oh, great. Yeah, great. I've used them in both top cut games. They're really, I think they've just got such a good skill set. Both of them, to be honest, they won me both games. So my game against Sploosh, I did an all you've got play with Lockjaw and beat Medusa four times. Sorry, three times with a throw, and was able to teleport Shuri so she could just move and push Okoye off an objective, and then my good boy sadly passed away after that. And then in the game I played on the weekend against Redempt, I was able to do all you've got play with Magneto to daze all of his characters, and then I was able to use Lockjaw and Medusa to teleport all over the place and pick up four or five cubes and secure some spider portals and do some crazy things. So they're really good. I'm really enjoying playing them.
So yeah, I noticed you've got all you've got, but you're not running field dressing. How do you decide when it's worth all you've gotting without that safety net?
I pretty much just count victory points up at that stage. I just look at it and go, going off the back of one of your last episodes, the swing turn.
Mm-hmm.
I find all you've got makes that swing turn enormous. So I tend to try and recognize when it is my turn to have a swing or a swing turn, and I try and leverage that as much as possible. And if I can, I try and daze as many characters as possible with that activation if I can. So it's kind of just more of an acceptable risk, just assessing it, counting up VPs. Can I win this turn? Can I make it an unassailable lead where you can't catch up? Do I need to do it? If not, I'm going to lose the game. That's probably the three things that go through my head when I'm deciding to do it. I haven't got field dressing in my roster anymore, and I'm regretting it every game so far. I went with last minute Dave for Lockjaw and Brace for Impact, but to be honest, I haven't used Brace in either game and haven't used last minute save in either game. But I guess the threat of having them there is enough to push people away from doing.
And I'm not sure about the timing, but it's possible that the ruling on last minute save not working on your own all you've got may not have come before List Lock, so that interaction doesn't work.
I just assumed it didn't work, so I haven't.
Oh, that's right. Okay, I haven't lost out then.
I haven't lost out. So I remember reading somewhere that it wasn't going to work, and just went, okay, I'll just assume that it's not going to work, whether they do a ruling on it or that. But I do find, I have missed field dressing, but last minute save has done wonders for me as well, because if I've got Lockjaw sitting within three of a character with enough power to save them, it kind of perturbs people away from doing too much shenanigans. So
yeah, it's one of those cards you just got to draw out. You've got to fall into that trap and then go, right, well, now that trap's gone.
Got to get out.
Bit like the brace.
Exactly. Same with brace. You just got to suck it out and just deal with it. And you know it's coming, but you just got to do something about it.
So I guess that leads on to Medpack. I've been having very mixed feelings about Medpack recently. Do you think it justifies its inclusion in the roster?
Yeah, I think so. It's quite easy to get off. That's probably the main thing for me with Medpack, is that it's 2 power for 3 wounds, so it's efficient. And it's very easy to get off, and it's quite a good range at range 3. So rather than brace could maybe save me, you know, 3 to 4 damage for the same amount of power across 2 characters. But I find Medpack as a known entity where I'm like, well, I know he's got damage on him and I need to heal it. So I can just Medpack when I need to. So I use Medpack every game. It never isn't used, if that makes sense.
Yep, absolutely. You've touched on Mayor Fisk briefly, and you've got the Hide Muscle in there, so I can understand there's good synergies there. But which of your 2 affiliations do you think plays better on Mayor Fisk?
I tend to lead towards Wakanda, because I can run Panther, Shuri, Okoye, Medusa, and Lockjaw on that one. So I find it quite a powerful 5-wide squad with a lot of reposition shenanigans from both myself and my opponent. Because I think my base threat value for Brotherhood is 11, I think. Magneto, Mystique, 11. Toad is 11. So I can only really add in 5 threat of flavor. So I've either got to go down a MODOK path or a Valkyrie, a Koye, and I'm really not a huge fan of adding multiple 2 threaders into a squad if I can avoid it.
Okay, why is that?
As good as a Koye is, like the Thanos killer, I find they're just that little bit easy to pop. You know, you might just be relying on them to do that. They've only got that 4 dice attack, or they've only got that 4 health or something, or they're just missing that little extra bit that a 3-threat would have, aside from Okoye, who probably should be 3-threat, but...
Discuss.
Yeah. I tend to avoid having multiples of them in there, only because when you look at Crisis Protocol, it's 1 on turn 3 or turn 4 most of the time. So every character's only got 6 actions or 8 actions to do. So I like to make every action count as much as I can. And aside from some really niche scenarios where, like, say, for instance, on the weekend, Toad, for me, was able to just hop around the board and rack up VPs. A lot of the time, their activation might not be as good as what I could have got out of, say, a Warrior of Legend charging Valkyrie or something like that, you know. So I tend to avoid multiple 2-threaders in rosters when in lists that I'm taking, if that makes sense. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to lead towards Wakanda for Mayor Fisk because I can get only take the single 2-threader, and I've got Medusa and Lockjaw in there as well.
You've got Mystic Wakandan Herbs in your roster as well. Now, I'm assuming that's more for to slow down a control build like another Wakanda player or a Web Warriors player rather than it is to try and score the Herb. Is that your thinking on that?
Yes and no. I've got this dream to throw Panther like a gridiron football across the table with Lockjaw and Medusa. I didn't quite measure it out properly against Sploosh, and his Storm miraculously managed to do 3 damage to my Panther on the first turn with a 4 dice attack energy. So he got enough power to throw my Panther out of range of my Lockjaw and Medusa, but I do have a dream to be able to cap that herb on turn one or at least turn two on the back end of using, you know, Lockjaw and Medusa to teleport Panther across the table as much as I can. But I think I'm an advanced R&D away from being able to do that. So I've got to still just fiddle with it a little bit. But I do have an intention to cap the herb, but it is definitely a slowing factor for like control style lists as much as I can as well.
Yeah, I did watch that game and I'd forgotten about that line of play. But yeah, that is an interesting one.
It is the dream.
Yeah, for sure. So you can see Lockjaw and Medusa having use in Wakanda as well as Brotherhood then.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I think they play in Brotherhood. They play off the back of being a delivery system and a kind of a protection set up for Magneto, so it doesn't have to waste actions moving. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Wakanda, they sort of play Lockjaw. Probably isn't as useful in Wakanda, but it is nice to be able to teleport around stuff if I have to. But I find Medusa particularly offensive in Wakanda with a self reroll. And then a Wakanda reroll and Braid Bash and Flurries and four pushes, and it's a crazy amount of control in there. I think I was talking to Utility Cookie and he said he's got a squad that plays against Wakanda Wave using Medusa, and she can almost give you as much repositioning shenanigans as like a Wakanda Wave with Wakanda Forever, or even has even more repositioning shenanigans. So I find her particularly offensive in Wakanda.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You're playing off the back of it. Yeah.
So what would be the one roster or the one team you really don't want to see across the table from this roster?
This is going to shock you, but I haven't thought that far ahead, mate.
Sure. No, I
probably wouldn't want to see, you know, the Loki Asgard, you know, hide muscle, rainbow bridging, running into a corner and doing nothing style play.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've got your own hired muscle, but you haven't got Enchantress, you haven't got Angela, you haven't got Miles, you haven't got any of those sort of classic pieces. I guess your best piece of tech is probably asteroid emming Magneto into their face and blowing them up, which is a pretty good piece of tech, don't get me wrong. But
That and Deception, just trying to grab the hide muscle carrier and bring it back as much as possible. But if they deploy properly, then that's probably a bit of a far away dream.
Yeah, and sometimes terrain can get in the way because it's only an advance, not a place. And the beast trained bigger than them, they can't go over it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So they can play around it. I don't have as much hide muscle tech as I probably should have, but if I had to pick a squad that I didn't want to play in, it would probably be off the back of Asgard with Loki with a mind gem, I think it is, and running around and grabbing all the extracts and just running into a corner and doing nothing for the game. I think that's how it plays, isn't it?
Yes, I've played that list. It's effective, but it's not fun.
Yeah, it's boring for both parties, but it is very, and again, like, you're playing in these huge tournaments, you know, 170 players. You know, you play lists to win, you know what I mean?
For sure.
You want to make a cut, you've got to go X and one. So you pick a squad that has an 80% win rate. And the thing I love about Marvel is that you have your roster. So you can take, you know, an 80% win rate style of play, and then you've probably got one or two roster slots left that you can splash your own little bit of shenanigans in there. So exactly, and that's what used to win tournaments in X-Wing. You know, we go to world championships with, you know, between 400 and 700 players. I think was the largest one. It was like some crazy amount. It was like 3 or 4 days of Swiss and into a top cut. But you know, these tournaments are always won by somebody who takes a squad that they know is going to get them X and one. And then they do a little tweak that they know is going to get them. They can predict the cut and go, right, well, I know there's going to be so many Asgard. I know there's going to be so many Wakanda. So I'm going to splash in, Cabal, because it's a soft Wakanda counter. So I'm going to splash that in when I can. and I'm gonna hedge my bets and assume I'm gonna play into Wakanda at some stage in the cut, and this is the tech that's gonna give me the edge to get over it. So.
Okay.
That's where our background comes from.
For sure. That's some really interesting thoughts there. If people wanted to get some more Travis Foss action, where should they go?
So I would check out Von Gaming or Von Darkmoor Gaming's stream page or YouTube. He tends to stream a lot of my games, mostly because it's just at a gentleman's hours here in Australia for him. So it's a lot easier for him to line it up, except for when I make him get up at 4 a.m. otherwise, check out Strike Better Podcast. It's on Spotify or all the places that you would normally get podcasts. I'm not sure where else you would get them, but all the places you would normally get them, I'm assuming it's there. So, yeah, check it out.
Awesome. Well, Travis, thank you very much for spending some time in the Danger Room.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of the Danger Room. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something to level up your next game. You can reach out to us on our Discord, Twitter, or Facebook. The links will be in the description. We have a questions channel on our Discord, so feel free to drop us some questions in there and we'll answer them on the show. Thank you for taking the time and listening to us. If you're liking what you hear, leave a rating or comment, or even both. We appreciate any feedback to help us grow and become a better group to bring you the best quality content that we can. See you next time in the Danger Room.